It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hi, it's Ken Bergen here from Hospo Reset, and today I'm talking to Vanessa Pollock. We're talking about developing leadership skills in young hospitality staff. It's a big topic. There's lots to talk about. I've always been interested in this from the times when I was employing 17, 16, 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds, and watching them kind of dive into all sorts of responsibilities. And as owners push younger and younger people into the person who's in charge, there's sure to be lots of stress, a few mistakes, and lots for them to learn about and lots more for us to learn about. Hey, Vanessa, great talking to you today.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Well, tell us about your life in hospitality and the work that you do now.
I feel like it's a long life in hospitality these days. Everything's taking a bit longer these days. So I began in hospitality pretty much as soon as I could get a job in hospitality. I did, and it saw me through school and it saw me through university. And I didn't really know that it was going to be my career. But when I did finish university, it was really all I wanted to do. I just loved it. I've always loved restaurants. And so I went to the Sunshine, originally from Melbourne, and worked for some great places in Melbourne, and then moved to the Sunshine Coast, and eventually got a great job as a restaurant and bar manager at the Sheraton there in Noosa, which was really, really busy. And
that used to be a big pink place, didn't it?
Right? It was pink when I was there. Absolutely. And there was it was called Cato's at the time, but it was the restaurant and bar. And I was fortunate enough to have an amazing food and beverage manager and an amazing general manager there at the time. And they really invested, particularly just in the personal development of their leaders, and having worked for lots of little places.
So what exactly does that mean? What did they do? What did they do extra?
Well, so Robin Rooley was the general manager at the time, and apart from being an amazing leader, she arranged for courses, whether they were in-house or externally, for people to come in and train in leadership, train their leaders in leadership, how to build personal habits for happiness, how to just that investment in their people was there. And I hadn't had that before, although I'd had good mentors and I'd had great leaders that I was working for. I hadn't had that sort of formal side of it, that we're actually going to invest in your leadership skills.
I'm guessing you wouldn't have even known such courses existed either.
No. Yeah. And so some of those were, you know, really interesting.
And were these like short, you know, half day or day?
Look, probably some were 3 days. I mean, I was sent to Kuala Lumpur to do a Cornell University course. And, you know, I was really young, so it helped immensely. But what I thought it did, Ken, as far as my career goes, is it made me realize that these things are available, and that there are so many places not exposed to that sort of essential training. And I thought, you've got all these little guys, these little restaurants, these mum and dad businesses, these small businesses who are really struggling and fighting every day to make ends meet and to lead their teams. But the big guys, some of them have got the opportunity to invest in their team and in the training of their leaders. And so that kind of sowed the seed for, I guess, what I do now, which is I like to think sometimes that I bring the stuff that the big guys know to the little guys. So that everyone,
and maybe more available, a little more affordable, or tighter in the time frame, those sort of
more accessible, more affordable, and just and designed in a way that isn't just for they're for bartenders, they're for kids who've just finished school and maybe it's their first job. They're for people who run nightclubs who might not be comfortable sitting in that formal boardroom training environment.
I think you've also highlighted another point, is how flattering it is and how impressive it is for a young person to know that someone's actually going to invest in you. And that still might mean just a half-day course or something. Going to Kuala Lumpur is pretty groovy too, but that's probably not going to happen too often at the minute. But just that, you know, impress factor, I think, is sometimes weird.
Yeah, well, that's culture, isn't it? It speaks to culture. Yeah, yeah. It says these people actually care about me as a person, not just my work, and they're investing in me, which means they think that I'm valuable. And that's culture. That's what builds an amazing culture. That's what keeps staff with you, and it helps them to develop as well. So
as you've developed a range of different trainings, what have you found is the most in demand and the most popular with business owners and the recipients? What are the top ones?
We work with, I guess to preface that, we work with clients who really do care about the development of their team. So occasionally, and there's nothing, I mean, we've got to make money. Absolutely. Venues have to make money. That's what they're there for. And we have sales courses and things that how to increase revenue and understanding industry costs. We do all of those. Those are not, surprisingly, are not always top of the list for the venues that we work with, which is kind of nice too. I guess the ones that seem to be most in demand first off are the introduction to leadership courses. So some of our courses are specifically for leaders, and others we have, well, most of our courses are specifically for leaders. Some of them are for your line staff, people who might be new to hospitality, or just for your food and beverage attendants or your bartenders. And so I guess that introduction to leadership and then moving forward, talking about connecting with your team and engaging your team, which of course increases productivity, which of course increases revenue. Those sorts of things seem to be key.
So when you're talking to maybe it's an owner who's inquiring or maybe just an applicant, what are the sort of the three or four top issues that you say we'll cover? And which of those were they expecting maybe, and which of them maybe are they a little bit surprised by?
Yeah, look, I guess if we're talking about, first of all, if a client does come to me, I would say, what are your pain points? Like what are you struggling with? What are your frustrations? Because there's always a course for that. Whatever the issue is, training is the answer. There's a course for that. So, and mostly it will come down to how their leaders are leading their team, essentially. So when we talk about engagement, when we talk about how your leaders can engage your team in order to increase productivity, increase revenue, increase staff retention, I mean, I don't think there's any surprises there from the venue owners. They would always say, yep, understand that. Probably one of the left of center ones that has a really big impact is when we talk about personality profiles with the leaders, because although a lot of other industries and career paths talk a lot about personality types, I don't think in hospitality, certainly at a small business level, that's something that's talked about, and it's such a good tool.
You've brought that up because I always find that fascinating. Having done a few of those profiles myself, I'm sure you have, and you discover, wow, that really is me, isn't it? Wow. And when you present, some kind of version of that, people just, the lights come on, don't they?
Yeah.
They really, and then they look at that person who's a bit aloof or a bit hard to deal with at work. She's that kind of person.
Yes, and they stop expecting to get a different result.
Yeah,
when they interact with this person, because that's what can drive you crazy and lead to burnout as a leader. You keep expecting this person to suddenly be enthusiastic, but guess what? That's not their personality.
It's like they're actively resisting you. Maybe they're just not even hearing you.
Yes, and it's so frustrating. Yeah. But, you know, if you can learn about personality types and then, and just in a real, we do it in a very simple way. It's surface stuff, but it is enough. It's a magic bullet to communicating.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the surprise ones for people.
Yeah. And what about, well, let's call it discipline's a strong word, but handling troublesome behavior or handling people who are stepping out of line. What is that a common issue that people want you to deal with?
And I mean, that it comes down to kind of giving feedback, doesn't it? And I think especially the younger teams, and let's face it now, with the staff shortages, we're getting younger, less experienced people at senior levels, which is fine, but it just means we need to help them and support them, which
So structures for giving feedback and having the courage to say to someone, I need you to sit down with me.
Yes.
Put your phone
down. Yeah, absolutely. And we always highlight that the more systems you have in place, so we talk about the four leadership hats that you have to wear as a leader in hospitality, and they kind of go in order, but you're swapping all the time. So sometimes you've got your coach hat on, and some leaders are really comfortable wearing their coach hat. It's when they're training, they're giving you the tools, they're showing you how to do stuff, and they're really comfortable in that space. But after you've coached someone, you then need to put on your cheerleader hat. And you need to be like, yep, you've totally got this. You're making great progress.
Right.
And you're encouraging them and you're supporting them. And then inevitably people go a little bit off track, don't they? You've trained them. You've cheerleaded them. They're getting a bit bored. Maybe they're just a few minutes late, and then maybe a few more minutes late, and their shirt's looking a bit more untidy, and they're just veering off track a little bit. And that's when we need to be the compass and we need to pull them back on track, the compass hat. But that's the one we often forget. And that just looks like, hey, remember we talked, it's not disciplinarian, that which is the next hat. But if you spend time with your coach hat on and your cheerleader hat and being that compass, you're not going to spend as much time being the disciplinarian. And I think sometimes we coach and then we discipline and we miss that in between.
The cheerleader and the compass.
And if you think about that compass.
The compass is before the discipline number four. I'm jumping in.
Number four. Okay. Yeah. But if you think about like how hard it is when someone goes off track a little bit and you need to bring them back this much, how much easier that is than letting them go off track all the way over here. And then like sometimes you can't bring them back at all.
And it's the importance of having things written down or actual numbers to kind of test things against. All those things.
Absolutely, and having those standards and the procedures in place so that it's easily referred back to, and you're not having to reinvent the wheel every time you want to bring someone back on track, or every time you have to counsel someone, or every time you have to discipline someone, you've got it there in black and white, and it's much easier for a new leader to say, "Hey, can you just read this again? Because I'm not quite sure where they're yet. So I want you to read that standard procedure tonight, come back and let's talk about it." That's an easier conversation than now.
So that's a compass conversation. Okay, interesting. Okay, which would you say of those four do people find the biggest challenge?
Personalities are very different. So
well, of course, so some types find different ones easier than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we do those training sessions, we always say, okay, so put up your hand if you're comfortable wearing the coach hat. It's fairly even. Some people put up their hand and say, I'm really comfortable being the disciplinarian. They're the guys that need to learn how to cheerlead more. A lot of it does tend to
They've got to remember to say great job when someone actually did a great job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what's going to make them an effective leader. Because if you're just a disciplinarian, you're not going to be an effective leader.
Yeah. I love that those four. Yeah, nice. Talk a little bit more about the compass hat because I'm interested in that. Well, when people, you got them on a course and you rev them up and they're feeling pretty powerful and lots of insights and things, when they go back to work, what sort of compass things might they, you know, start implementing or do more of or change?
Look, really the compass hat is what I think what young leaders and new leaders, although having said that, I know plenty of seasoned leaders that might do it as well. They see someone doing something not quite right, and they bottle it up because they think, I've told them
that one.
How to do
I know that one.
And they internalize it. They bottle it up.
Yes.
And they see it happen again. And they bottle it up. And each time that pressure cooker is getting worse and worse. And eventually they blow. And that's when they're yelling at someone or
it's jumped straight into discipline.
Exactly.
Or might need to. Yeah.
So if you're wearing that compass hat, it really is about seeing something and going, I saw how you did that. I know we talked about it last week. It's not quite what we talked about, was it? I'm wondering what made you take that action? Or don't forget, we talked about this. This is what I need to see next time. So it's just that friendly, in the moment, remember we've done. You're not introducing new information.
remember we've done. Good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I think that's just it's easier to, if you're non-confrontational and if you're the personality type that's really comfortable as the cheerleader and just wants everybody to do really, really well, it's much easier to take that approach of, hey, don't forget.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we talked about this.
Yeah, nice. Because people do say, when people are feeling like a fossil or a bit older, they do say, oh, everyone says that everything's awesome, everything's amazing, and it's not awesome. It's good, but it's not awesome. Yeah. But it's just a vocabulary.
And some personality types are not warm and fuzzy and bright and unicorns and confetti flying through the air. And that's totally fine. But if you want to be a balanced leader, and you're always going to have your preference, it doesn't mean suddenly you're going to be a natural cheerleader. If you're comfortable as a coach and a disciplinarian, you've got to balance that out.
So let's apply this to our staff who maybe they've been here in Australia for a couple of years. They came from Nepal or they came from Spain or the Philippines or something like that. Boom, land in an Aussie workplace where it will be like the United Nations oftentimes. That's how HOSPO is most of the time. But they're kind of, there's a kind of Australian way of doing things. How do you give them more confidence to take on these hats? And what do you find are kind of issues that they find a bit more struggle?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I mean, I do, going back to personality profiling, I think you can use those same tools to connect. So if naturally I'm a non-confrontational person, and or alternately I think now I'm a manager and I'm managing these Australians and I need to be like an army sergeant and I just need to demand to do stuff. If you can learn about these personality profiles and learn that, oh, well, look, Sophie likes it when I say things this way, but Tom likes it when I'm really direct and straightforward. Yeah. I think
Tom wants a list and text it to me. Yes. The four things to do first thing tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And he'll do it every single time.
Yeah.
So I think that is a really good start for people who may only have one way of dealing with things. And I do think that can be a cultural thing. Some cultures are quite subservient, or they feel like they're not in a position where they're able to assert their authority. So, yeah, look, I think understand if you're the manager or you're the restaurant owner and you have got leaders underneath you, it's important to understand their personality profiles, and then it's important for them to understand the type of people that they've got.
There must be some very rich conversations you can have regularly in team updates. Just every couple of weeks, let's talk about one personality type, or let's talk about your favourite customer who is a particular type or something. Just keep instilling that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
I did with the work I was doing previously, we did the DISC profile, which is, well-known typology into four with lots of variations, and it was pretty sophisticated because it gave it afterwards. It gave us how we would work with other people by name. You could link up with someone and so-and-so likes this and your style is this. So to be most effective.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff, really fascinating.
And I mean, we are very surface level when we talk about DISC, but we talk about it from just in talking to someone, and as you said, guests, just from talking to someone, if they've got a couple of things that you notice, you can, yes, it's generalizing. 100% it's generalizing. Yeah. But what have you got to lose? Like, maybe you're wrong. Yeah. So,
well, there's a typology. I'm not sure if it's exactly based on DISC, but that I found years ago and I refer to, and it talks about customer types as like recipe people. They're the ones who want to know exactly how many sandwiches are in the mixed sandwich platter and how many days before the deposit has to be paid and what the allergens are, those kind of types of people. And then the barbecue people, they just want to know what time the bar closes, how late's the bar open till, and just all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that's a high eye, isn't
I forget
it?
What the other two, there's another two types too, but it's just
it's fascinating, it's interesting, but it's a really invaluable tool as a leader.
So talk about how women handle some of these issues rather than men too. Mm. We talked about cultural, overseas and local. What about male, female?
Look, to be honest, I don't know. I mean, there are women in the industry who are strong and determined and forceful and can be quite aggressive in their goals. And there are obviously also women who are non-confrontational, who mm-hmm. struggle to assert their authority. But I think there's a real mix. I don't think it's down. Again, I think it's down to personality.
Personality is the first kind of differentiator rather than the other factors. Yeah, useful.
If you're thinking, I mean, the challenges of, for instance, people that work in the kitchen. So the people that choose to work in the kitchen tend to be a certain personality mm-hmm. type because that's what they like.
What type are they more likely to?
So if we're talking about DISC, it's what's called, you would know, a C or a high C or a D, which is more. So pastry chefs tend mm-hmm. to be high Cs, and being a high C when you're in DISC, as you would probably know, is you're very much about compliance and specific ways and specific measurements and specific recipes. There's a process, detail orientated, 100%.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Bartenders also tend to be that as well. And I'm generalizing, but this is what we've found. Yeah. If you're front of house, one of the things is you're generally front of house because you like people, right? So you're mm-hmm. going to be a people-focused person, whereas people who work in the kitchen are not necessarily people-focused person. They're about the work.
Stay away from me, customers.
Yeah. So what we find in the kitchen is there's a lot of D behavior. So when you're talking about D behavior, it's quite demanding. It's quite confrontational. It's very direct. And so but that is not always their personality. Sometimes that's just what they've learnt from that space. Uh-huh. So I guess you do get a bit of a mix.
Yeah.
But front of house, if you're, most of them would be people focused, which means they'd potentially be the personality type that just wants everyone to be happy, wants everything to be okay.
And maybe this is explaining some of the miscommunication between front and back of house too. Because they're just kind of looking at the world from different places.
100%.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So you wrote a terrific article, which I'll link in the show notes recently, about helping staff handle the vaccination requirements. Mm. And it's sort of, every week the rules change mm-hmm. a little bit, but, you know, people had to show their vaccination certificates and there'll be some version of that for a long time, I think. And this is a real issue for, my God, the 17-year-olds in charge of out the front this cafe on Saturday morning and people freaking out, how's young Sarah going to handle this? Could you, this kind of COVID leadership issues, how do you lay that on top of these other things you've been talking about?
Yeah, it's a lot. Our leaders in hospitality have got a lot on their plate at the moment. Yeah. But, you know, it's nothing they can't handle. They can absolutely handle it. But they talking to our clients and our team before that mandate came in where people had to be vaccinated to enter a venue and the venue had to be responsible for policing that essentially, people were scared. Staff were scared. Yeah. They were worried that they were going to get, you know, yelled at, that they were going to have angry guests there. They were worried that people were just going to try and make a point. And look, nobody wants that. Nobody gets up and goes.
I don't think it happened nearly as much as people imagined.
It did not. It absolutely didn't. Yeah. But what you can do to give your team confidence is prepare them for the worst. Hope for the best. Yes. Prepare for the worst.
And review the situations regularly if there's a wrinkle or something like that.
But they do have a lot on their plate at the moment. And really 2022, and certainly the kickoff to 2022 with the teams that we've been working with, the big issue is staff shortage, isn't it? Like that's
And you were saying before we started how leaders and people, they're just exhausted. Mm. They're spent. Yeah. They're overworking. They've cancelled their holidays. Their owners are kind of run out of money and all these stress factors. Yeah. What are some of the recommendations? Is there a way we should modify our leadership style a little bit or emphasize some things more?
Look, I don't know that it's modifying the leadership style. I think maybe there needs to be at different times you'll have a different focus within your venues. Maybe your beverage cost is too high, so you're going to have a blitz on your beverage cost. You're going to try and bring those margins up and the costs down. down.
Yeah.
And I think really at the moment it's there needs to be a focus on the wellness of our teams. And we know that's important to the millennials. We know that that's the key thing for staff and has been for a good few years. So it's not just corona related or pandemic related. But I think, sorry, you were going to go?
No, it's interesting because the mental health words have been used for a few years now. And I sometimes get a bit impatient because people just throw the terms around, but they don't actually talk about practically, that means doing less of this work or more of,
really good point, because I think a lot of people feel that. Look, when we talk, so we talk a lot about practicing mindful hospitality because the industry is known as we work hard and we play hard and we've worn this like a badge of honour for umpteen years, right? Which is fine, and we all love that in the industry, so we don't want to change that, but we also need to look after ourselves. And there's never been a focus on that.
And when people get to 30, they say, I can't do this
That's
anymore.
Right. That's right.
And we lost another good person.
Yeah, we lose people. And so there's got to be a sustainable way of managing your career. And the first is to learn as much as you can, because how easy is it once you've learned stuff? I mean, it was hard to ride a bike for the first time, wasn't it? But you learn and then things get easier. But the second step is really to promote within your venue the benefits of looking after yourself. It's not every time we have a team catch up, we go to the pub and we get drunk. It's let's meet and go for a hike at Mount Cutha. Let's have a game of beach cricket.
Staff meals this week are going to be this healthy choice.
Absolutely.
No chips.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, there's a bowl of fruit in the cool room, which is constantly there for staff whenever you want it. Or we provide a family meal for everybody. I have a colleague who is the manager of a venue, and I often when a great job comes up, I might give her a call and say, are you still happy where you are? And she said, I will never leave because everybody gets a staff meal. We sit down for family meal. Everybody, you can come in even if you're not working.
Beautiful. Yes.
Come in. There's a staff meal. It's banquet style. Yeah. Everyone gets together. Everyone has family meal every day.
And guess what? When I suddenly caught short, I can ring someone up and say, can you come tonight? And they will.
Yes, absolutely. And they're not leaving. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So I think this year they're definitely, and certainly now, maybe not this year, but now we need to we need to support our managers in a way that is, are you eating? Are you sleeping? Yeah. Are you okay? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's asking those questions and not.
I think the simple thing of just good nutrition and good staff meals, if someone's living in a shed flat, my God, you would not believe what is not in the fridge.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. Let's talk about the D word, delegation, which as you get older and more experienced, you start to find things that others would love to do that you find a bit tedious. Yep. But I think it's something that young managers grasping everything to themselves, they don't know that it's okay to let it go, or they're not confident. What do you see and how do you coach people in that?
We include delegation in our time management workshop, and it is something that...
That was my next topic, time management, so let's mix all that up together.
Yeah, look, good topics. And the more people I talk to about delegation, it's not just the young leaders. There's plenty of seasoned leaders that don't, feel comfortable delegating, and it's not just hospitality. Mm-hmm. It's all industries out there.
And would you say that's one of the personality types are more likely to... Hang on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Uh-huh. So, look, when we talk about delegation, especially for first-time leaders and maybe those personality types that are a bit quieter, maybe a bit more introverted, it's really important for them to be using tools to delegate ahead of time. So if you have got a shift plan ready for your shift and it's got a list of pre-service duties for every single person and it's got the list of after-service duties for every single person, then you don't have to be in the midst of it going, now can you polish the cutlery? And now can you go and scrub this chewing gum from under the chairs?
Yeah.
Because it's all there.
Steve, you're doing that pack-up list.
Yep.
Yeah, which has got 12 things on it.
Yeah. And so it's all there. So you're delegating ahead of time, you're delegating on a shift plan, and it's a very non-confrontational, easy way to do it. And then if they're not doing it, you can say, have you checked your after-service duties? Just go check that, and if you can get onto that straight away.
With the compass hat on.
It's much easier.
Yeah, nice. I like that. Yeah, but and I guess even there's some vocabulary here to teach people who are brand new to this. What does the word delegation actually mean? Some people may never have heard that. I don't think it's in too many school curriculums. It doesn't need to be, probably, but that's interesting. So talk more about time management, because I have to say, as someone with pretty hopeless time management, mea culpa, but I kind of hear the term, maybe just because I know I'm not great at it, but I get a bit impatient with it. What do you mean by this? It's just what. So how do you, coach and explain this with your...
Look, with leaders, they can no longer, even if you're a supervisor, you can no longer just turn up to work, do your shift and go home. Like, you have to have incentive programs. You have to do the rosters. You have to do ordering. You have to do stock take. You have to organize team meetings. You have to organize maybe weekly connect. We do walk and talks with our team. So you've got to organize those. Like, there's lots of things outside of service. So, so it's at that point, really, you need to start to have a plan to manage your days.
Yes. Because out of the 7 hour, 8 hours of your shift, maybe 4.5 is service time and the rest is
And if,
all the rest.
Yeah. And look, if you're a manager and you've got one admin day, which you probably need if you're a manager, kind of a minimum, you need to be able to plan that day, because otherwise all you do is put out fires all day long and you don't do the stuff that's important. And it's that old Eisenhower matrix of working out what's important and what's urgent.
Yes. Okay.
And
again, that's another kind of model that most people would never have been exposed to, and they can find quite illuminating.
100%. Yeah. So we incorporate that in our training too, just so people can kind of recognize. And look, let's face it, in hospitality, we're mostly working in the urgent sphere of those things. So the things that are important, like having a team meeting, most hospitality venues wouldn't have. They'd be lucky to have a team meeting once every 6 months.
Yes, yeah.
And really you need one every 2 months because communication is key. If you want your culture to be great and you want to be able to retain your team and build that staff retention, you've just got to be doing those things outside of your shift.
Do you recommend for our new young leader who's come in to take over a place, they're keen, the place is working okay, but they just haven't had meetings.
Yes.
But what sort of rhythm would you recommend that they start and make it affordable and practical and maybe online or face-to-face?
I think online is better than nothing at all, 100%. Mm-hmm. If they can get the team together. So I think it's almost like that build-up effect. So they should be having briefings before service. Whenever possible. So
that's the mini one, isn't it? The 6 minute one.
Yeah. But I think every 2 months they should be implementing a team meeting where everyone comes. And if they're doing it regularly every 2 months and they're having their briefings, if 3 or 4 people can't come, that's fine. It's not a problem. If you're having them once a year, yes, you need everybody to come to that and it makes it much harder. Yes. But what I would suggest is that they start with their time management practice and they get an annual calendar and they say, right, I'm going to now schedule in my six team meetings for the year.
Right. Okay.
Everybody knows when they are. It doesn't mean they're not going to change. Of course, stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
But you've got to start somewhere. So I would put those in immediately and then I'd work back from that and go, okay, well, my first team meeting is now in a month's time. I need to get the posters up. I need to start sending my messages out to my team. I need to start getting my agenda together and so that I can make this happen on time. And that's where your time management strategy falls into play, where you map out, you've got your to-do list and you map it out on a daily basis. When am I going to do these things?
Right. I love that. Mm. Yeah, I like that a lot. Managing the boss, managing upwards or handling the owner or whatever, because bosses, managers, owners come in all sorts of shapes. Yep. And you're, as the venue manager, you're kind of the intermediary and the staff are looking to you to protect them. Mm-hmm. From the heat sometimes and make a case for certain things. Yeah, how do you develop skills?
Yeah, we have a course on that too, which, it's not on our online platform, but it will be hopefully this year. But, it is. We often get asked that by our leaders because they will sit in a, you know, leadership.
By the senior leaders you asked for it?
By the senior leaders, not the owners, but by the senior leaders. So we might be training those senior leaders on leadership and they'll be saying, but my boss doesn't do that, but the owner doesn't do that. So, which is why that managing up kind of came into play, because you're right, Ken, it's really important. And I think there are some things that you can do. It starts with empathy. It starts with understanding the pressures that your boss is under. I think there is the other critical thing in that actually does come from understanding industry costs, which a lot of people don't really understand. Yeah.
And just understanding how numbers work and where to find them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because then the empathy is allowed to kick in. If your managers just think, well, the boss is raking in all this money and they're driving around in their Maserati and then they come in and they order stuff, what they need to understand is actually what the reality is. And then they're going to protect that a bit more. So there's those. But I think there's also the leaders can take a little bit more charge when it comes to what the boss might be asking for. So the owner might come in and say, oh, listen, I need you to do blah, 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 blah. And the manager's thinking, I've got no staff. I haven't even done my rosters for this week.
We tried that before. It didn't work.
All this sort of stuff. So I think one of the things is really is asking for a specific time frame or a deadline for that. So if they come in and say, I want you to do yada, 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 and you're up to your eyeballs and your to-do list, it's perfectly okay to say, yep, not a problem. I will get on to that. Is it okay if I do that by the end of the week?
Mm.
And then the boss can either say, no, I want it done now. Well, it's their restaurant. You work for them. That's what you got to do. But there's a big chance that they'll go, yeah, that's fine, because they'll think about it.
Yes.
So I think confirming those sorts of things is because what I tended to do, if someone asked me to do something, I would jump. And what I would just go do it.
You drop everything
else. And then other things suffer. Yeah. And then you feel even more overwhelmed.
I guess there's in this too, there's some skills in writing a short report, or it might be as simple as a, you know, one paragraph email with some numbers in it or something like that, but putting that kind of written stuff down in a way that's crisp and coherent, maybe three bullet points or something like that
to clarify and open up that communication is really important. And I think if managers show that they're respecting their own time, so they've got their daily planner or they've got their work schedule or whatever they've got, if they're respecting their own time, then I think other people respect your time.
Right. Are you finding people are using like shared Google calendars and things like that?
Yeah, some people are. I mean, we developed our own planner.
Tell us about that. That's a printed one, isn't it? Tell us about that. What was the thinking behind it?
So for years we were teaching about how to manage your days effectively. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that workshop, people would say, well, do you have one that, you know, a plan?
It sounds great. What can you do? What have you got for us?
And so we'd sort of say, well, this person does this planner and this person does this planner. You could check those out. And then we're up to edition 5 now. But originally we just thought, look, we should create this. We should create it specifically for hospitality people with tips and reminders and all the foodie days.
365-day diary, is that the idea?
It's a half a year, so it's nice and compact so that people don't have to lug around big things, but it's a nice compact one. And, it goes for 6 months.
So people go to your website, they can find details about that.
Yeah, it's in a bookshop here in Brisbane as well. But, it's literally to help hospitality leaders to manage their time effectively and not feel overwhelmed, which it comes down to that mindful hospitality as well.
Tools. And I guess there's some personality types will just leap on that sort of thing. And others, maybe it's like me. They're just never going to be super good at time.
Time management is a skill and everybody can learn it.
All right. Thank you. Good reminder. Actually, I find putting things in diaries and having, kind of deadlines is works pretty well.
Deadlines. We always say what gets scheduled gets done. So if you actually schedule it in, it will get done. If it's just on your to-do list somewhere and it's not scheduled, it's probably not going to happen. So, yeah, what gets scheduled gets done. But time management is about finding what works for you. And for some people, and myself included, I like to be able to scribble something down when I think of it. I like to have pages. I like to be able to fold my calendar out.
So are you doing that in an app on your phone, scribbling things down, or are you more a pencil and
I use the planner. Yeah, I use the planner. But some people are much more comfortable with apps on their phone and those sorts of things. Okay. So you've got to find what works for you. But if it's not working for you, try something else. And then if that doesn't work for you, try something else. But you've got to commit for a while.
That reminds me. For years I would try different to-do lists, apps and things like that. Anyway, I finally found the one that works and I've used
it. So what do you use?
And I use Apple. I just use the Reminders app.
Yeah.
And that's... That'll do. You know, it's got to, because I can set times and deadlines on it, and it syncs to my phone, my iPad, wherever I am, one place, and works.
And that's what it is. It's what works for you.
But I think what you're saying is to everyone, you actually need a system.
Yes.
Now, whether it's a paper, pen, or an app or something like that, but not having one is... That is not okay.
No. They say that the study showed that you can save up to 2 hours a day by putting effective time management strategies in place. That's like 10 hours a week on a working week.
Yeah. It's a lot of making time to do other things that way.
Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. So it's a worthwhile pursuit.
Do you find the younger potential leaders or leaders who you coach and train across technology using it pretty fluently, and is that easy for them, or is that a bit of a myth saying that, you know, millennials are kind of tech savvy?
No, I think they embrace it really well, and I think that it's lucky that during the whole COVID thing we actually had the millennials at the forefront because I mean it's second nature.
Zoom's a no-brainer now, isn't it? I remember being inspired. I saw it on LinkedIn once. A pub manager went during complete lockdown, and he was still have his weekly Zoom meeting with everyone, and they would have a trivia and they would do this, and it was just so
I love
good,
it.
You know,
There's a company that when they have their weekly Zoom meetings, they all have to wear funny hats.
Okay. Yeah. I remember I started off doing that, but I didn't.
Oh, really?
I was kind of glad. I remember. Gosh, it's going on damn two years now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But using that technology to connect, another one of our clients, they do a monthly, they've got multiple venues, they've got like 120 staff, but once a month the CEO does a video and talking to everybody and sends that out.
Oh, okay.
And
brilliant.
They used to do a newsletter, now they do the video, and the video everybody watches. Nobody used to read the newsletter.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to connect.
Okay. Yeah, yes. Mm. And good for a CEO or manager to, getting that. And again, that's kind of like it's big business habits which are actually coming down, because those all hand things, that's corporate land.
Yep.
But why shouldn't even small place do
100%.
It?
100%. And that's literally what I'm so passionate about, Ken, that it's finding what are other industries using that we can use.
Yes.
And not everything.
I love you saying that because, I mean, I personally love looking at retail.
Yes.
Types of retail and seeing not so much necessarily around management but around display and stock and staff training and things like that. And nice. And I mean, in a way, that is maybe a new skill for our young leader is schedule and run a Zoom meeting, a half-hour Zoom meeting for your staff where there's going to be a combination of housekeeping, a little bit of fun, some acknowledgement. I'm just looking through our some coach, some cheerleader, some compass, and even a little bit of discipline.
Yeah.
Hey, do you remember Monday morning we came in? Oh my God.
Yeah.
But as actually like set it up and distribute it to everyone and text it to them or put it in the WhatsApp group or whatever.
It's a great
whatever.
Idea. Yeah. Mm. It's a really great idea.
We're full of good ideas. Yeah. I'm loving this conversation, by the way. But I need to wrap it up. What millennials, that word Gen Z, what are the youngies teaching the oldies about better leadership?
I think it's that. I think it comes down to that prioritizing of mental health. You know, I think it's that.
Don't just kind of put up with it and stick it out?
Yeah. I mean, there was a recent study again that cited that the millennials would rather turn down a promotion than sacrifice their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I respect that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
I respect that because, and I think, let's face it, that's part of the reason hospitality is suffering right now is because there hasn't been that focus on.
There's been no modification of these brutal jobs with crazy hours.
And it's not sustainable. Yeah. And it shouldn't be sustainable.
So I
respect that a lot about them.
Yeah,
and I like their commitment to, they want to make a difference in the world. Uh-huh. They want the world to be a better place. I like that they are involved in charitable exercises or that they want their venues to have a social conscience. They hold their venues accountable when it comes to packaging or I think that says something.
Yeah, interesting. And that could be an interesting little impress for the new manager who arrives, who maybe everyone's a bit flat and it's all, everything's a bit plain, finding, something
support.
Even I know the old-fashioned regular trips to blood donations, things like that. Yeah. Some people don't even know what that is.
Yes, Well, at Christmas time, some of our clients, instead of doing Secret Santa amongst the team, they did Secret Santa and donated to a local organisation called MICA here in Brisbane, which helps families who are less fortunate and potentially those, you know, kids might have not had food at Christmas time and now they've got beautiful, great big hampers. So, you know, people feel connected to that and I like those initiatives.
Yeah, and there's someone in that, in those personality types who actually would be very thoughtful and would not forget that sort of thing, because there's another personality type who say, "Oh, great idea," and then immediately
it's true.
they would never remember it.
Yeah,
again.
it's true. Yeah,
make sure you give it. What type is it?
That would probably be the type D.
Okay.
Yeah. So
they're the ones who'd remember.
So two of the four are task focused, and two of the four are people focused. And the two that are task-focused are the ones that tend to end up being in the kitchen, potentially the bar, and the two that are people-focused end up being on the floor.
At the front. Nice. Well, I've loved this conversation.
Me too.
It's a topic that fascinates me, and I think anyone who does your workshops or your different activities or buys your diary or things are very lucky. So how do people find you, connect up with you?
So they can check out our website, which is vptd.com.au, which stands for Vanessa Pollock
vptd.com.au.
Yeah. And so the planner is available there. We are always happy to talk to business owners and people in hospitality. And if we can't help you, we'll find someone who can.
So it sounds like one of the spin-offs from COVID is that lots of your stuff's online as well, available pretty much anywhere.
Yes. We've got a virtual training room online. You can find the links to that from our website as well. They're short courses. Yeah. They're super affordable. So you can use them for your entire team or just your leaders. It's a very cost-effective way to just develop your leaders and invest in their growth.
Well, this has been fantastic. So thank you very much. And, looking forward to another conversation in the future.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.